This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, November 8th, 2018. I'm Caleb Brown. The much-hailed and maligned protectionism emanating from the White House has been bothersome to people who believe in freedom, but is it nearing its end? Scott Linsicum, an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, is author of the new Cato Trade Bulletin, The Protectionist Moment That Wasn't. We spoke Tuesday. Immediately after the approval of the revised NAFTA that has this unpronounceable acronym, unfortunately for us, this was Canada, the United States, and Mexico, somebody said, look, you can look at this agreement and say that Trump got his victory here, but what I see is very different, which is this is the outer limit of the protectionism that Donald Trump would like to impose. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think that's pretty true. I would argue, though, that his steel and aluminum tariffs and his China tariffs are probably the outer bounds of his protectionism. But the NAFTA renegotiation really is an excellent example of how there really is no appetite in this country for a real protectionist America, because despite the president's claims, I know this is going to surprise you, but they were wildly oversold that this was a radical change from the previous NAFTA. Fact is that the fundamental principles of NAFTA, being free trade in goods and services across borders, is mostly untouched. And in fact, in certain things like digital trade is expanded. So, you know, the idea that NAFTA was the worst thing ever, that free trade is horrible, all of that, just simply is belied by the fact that the new NAFTA, the USMCA, is really the same type of agreement, just with some fiddling around the edges.
So what do we make of the not insignificant change in polling regarding protectionism in general?
You know, I think there's two big lessons we can draw from the trade polling. The first is that the United States and Americans in general are simply not protectionist. They, in general, support trade, globalization, that type of stuff, whatever you want to call it. So if you look at and I mean, every polling outfit shows basically the same thing, that American support for these kind of broad principles of free trade and goods and services is at all-time highs. And you're not talking about 52%. You're talking about 75% or more in some cases. The number of Americans who think that trade has been a net benefit for them and their families and so forth is, again, at all-time highs. And by contrast, the number of Americans who think that trade has been a net cost, a net problem, is at all-time lows. So that's the first broad thing you can see in the polls. But the second that is, I think, equally important is that Americans really don't have strong views on trade generally. And in fact, when you look at the polls, the trade is the by far the issue on which more Americans are willing to admit ignorance or ambivalence. There's a great chart in my new paper on these issues that shows this peak of disinterest, and trade is well above any other issue: Medicare vouchers, taxes, foreign policy, you name it. So that second point really lets you interpret other polls on trade issues. When you see polls on tariffs or on NAFTA, what you see is wild swings in partisan affiliation for these specific trade issues. Republicans all of a sudden becoming pro-tariff and anti-FTA for a little while there. But the reality is that this is more parroting partisan talking points, kind of tribalism, that, you know, that's what Trump is saying, so that's what they're going to support. They see it, these polls as a proxy, or these questions as a proxy for Trump. So, you know, those are, I think, really two very important points as you talk about trade and trade politics, you know, and how we our policymakers need to kind of respond, or how free traders should talk about these issues.
It does have to bother you at least a little bit, the fact that anti-free trade sentiment can be so easily abandoned by a party that has for decades held itself up as the party of economic literacy and of free trade?
Oh, it's horribly frustrating. Horribly frustrating. I mean, you know, for those listening, I mean, I actually have advised a lot of Republican candidates in the past, including John McCain in his presidential campaign in 08, on trade. And because there was a my kind of free trade positions were a fit for that party. Now, that is an era long gone these days because of who's at the top of the party. But the silver lining in the polling is that you realize that we are going through a moment where you have a protectionist at the top of the ticket. And simply the comfort is that the opinions of those below are just simply following that lead, and that there could be the hope is that the next candidate would move back towards the previous position. Now, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen, but you know, it is easy to understand why most Americans, and by the way, it's not just Republicans. You know, Democrats for years were trade skeptics while George W. Bush was trying to pass various FTAs, and now they are all of a sudden the freest of free traders. I mean, it's crazy. 80% of Democrats now oppose tariffs and support free trade and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, the malleability of public opinion occurs on both sides. And, you know, like I said, I think I can understand it. It's quite rational. You know, most Americans do not work in industries that are highly exposed to import competition or highly dependent on foreign export markets. Most Americans work in services. You know, about 80+% of the labor force is in services, and most of those services are not globally tradable services, either by the nature of just the fact that services are a little harder to trade, or the fact that it's just certain industries, right? You know, the guy down the street working at the massage place, or doing your, you know, giving you an oil change, or your plumber, those people just they don't have any sort of contact with these kind of big global trade phenomena. So for that reason, the benefits or costs they feel are very indirect. You know, you're gonna save a few dollars on a t-shirt. You're gonna save $100 on a TV. That type of stuff they see, and then all of the unseen benefits of trade they're never gonna see. So because of those issues, voters are gonna remain rationally ignorant. And you know, look, again, yes, it is frustrating to see the Republican Party descend into this protectionist moment of sorts. But it is, again, it's understandable that the vast majority of Republican voters just simply haven't given it a lot of thought. And let's face it, trade is kind of complex. Comparative advantage is counterintuitive. So you can understand why the polls are so malleable on this issue.
Americans care about how protectionism hurts their families and their family budgets, their fellow workers, U.S. farmers and exporters. What evidence have we seen of the costs of the tariffs that the president has imposed thus far on those groups of people?
Right. So you're starting to see discrete harms. So the most obvious harms are foreign exporters, American soybean farmers, for example, getting shut out of foreign markets due to retaliation that was utterly inevitable, totally foreseeable, retaliation against President Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum, and then on Chinese imports. So that's an obvious example. But you're also seeing American manufacturers really struggling with higher input costs, again, steel and aluminum. Or other areas. President Trump's tariffs on dishwashers have caused, on washing machines have caused those to go up, those products to go up in price. So consumers are feeling that as well in higher prices. Now, those consumer pains have not been passed on significantly so far. American manufacturers are really trying hard to avoid that, but they are happening. And you're seeing companies that are going out of business because their input costs just went up 25-30%. Because, of course, steel prices have skyrocketed since President Trump's tariffs went into effect. So these types of pains produce tangible reported harms. You're actually seeing, you know, free traders always had to talk in the abstract. Oh no, if you do this, X and Y will happen, but you know, cooler heads prevailed and it didn't. Well, now we're actually seeing the unfortunately obvious and foreseeable harms that protectionist policies cause, whether it again be higher prices, lost investment, closed businesses, or closed foreign markets. So the interesting thing about that in the polling is, you know, I just spent a few minutes saying that people don't care, but they do care when you start putting a price tag on the policy. So what I discovered in looking at the polling data is that while Americans tend to have a very partisan or tribalistic view towards these specific policies in the abstract, you know, when you ask, oh, do you want to buy American? Yeah, you're going to get 80% of Americans say yes, if not higher. Are you willing to pay more to buy American? Yes, you'll still see pretty high levels. But when you start saying, are you willing to pay $100 for a pair of jeans that you currently pay $50 for, the polls just collapse. When you start talking about actual retaliation, you know, soybean farmers have been shut out of this market or so forth and so on, you see Americans' support collapse. And so, and it's poll after poll after poll, where if a poll question includes things that have actually happened. So President Trump imposed tariffs on imports from China. The Chinese retaliated against American soybean exports and other exports that have closed that lucrative market to American companies. And then you ask, do you support those policies? Yeah, then the support goes down the tubes. So it's a pretty fascinating and I think telling issue in that once people start to understand the implications of these policies that they typically don't think a lot about, then you start seeing pretty significant opposition to them, which is, I think, again, kind of a silver lining to our current moment.
You said that Democrats have become ardent free traders in this moment that we're experiencing of Republican-led protectionism. Is there any reason to think that that is going to be a long-term transition? That is to say, Democrats will be the party of free trade as they once were.
Yeah, I don't want to be too optimistic. I think that again, you know, in each party, I think you see a chunk of protectionists, a chunk of free trader, globalist, whatever you want to call it, and then a malleable middle of sorts that sloshes between the two. I do think that on the Democratic side, the free trade globalist cohort is growing, and I think it's growing for two big reasons. The first is that, you know, there's been a lot of reporting about how highly educated or wealthier individuals, these kind of suburbanite folks that typically voted Republican, these kind of Mitt Romney Republicans, have now moved into the Democratic Party, the rhinos of sorts. So they tend to be more free trade. Whether it be having taken economics classes or, you know, following these issues or working in globally traded goods or services. So that's the first sign. The other sign, though, is just the young people, millennials and whatever the generations below millennials is. Zennials? I don't know. Anyway, you know, the kids. The kids are uniformly more supportive of open trade and globalization. And I think a good part of that can be explained by what's in all of our pockets and, you know, the smartphone and other technological innovations that we simply understand quite well are the result of global supply chains or global cross-border information flows, that kind of stuff. So young people in general, again, tend to be voting Democratic. They tend to be especially in this election and probably the next one as well. So for that reason, I think that you can assume that the Democrats will be more pro-trade than they were in, say, the 90s and even 2000s when Democrats were very trade skeptical because they were being pushed by labor unions and environmental groups that were highly, highly skeptical of trade and globalization for all sorts of reasons. Now, it seems that that's shifting a bit. You're moving back the other way. But I will give a bit of caution, and that is, you know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and some of the others on the farther left side of the party are pretty protectionist. So to the extent they can influence those voters or influence that malleable middle, then we could end up, you know, in back where we were pre-Trump.
Based on what I read in your bulletin, I was reminded of the fact that I don't think I've heard Donald Trump talking as much about the trade deficit as he had in the on the campaign trail in 2016 and maybe in some of the early days of his presidency in 2017. You point to polling that indicates that maybe 1% of Americans view that as a really important thing.
Yeah. And I think the reason that he has stopped talking about the trade deficit is that despite the implementation of all these tariffs, trade deficit keeps going up. Now, any legitimate economist would have told you in January of this year, and many, many did, that the trade deficit was inevitably going to go up because the trade deficit, of course, is not based on tariffs and unfair trade policy in general. It's based far more on these kind of global macroeconomic issues, relative savings and investment, all that kind of good stuff. And because the United States had these massive tax cuts, and then a bunch of spending, it was inevitable that the trade deficit was actually going to increase. But the other really interesting thing with Trump's rhetoric is that he has shifted, and I think this is again kind of a silver lining of our current moment. He has shifted dramatically in the last 9 months from an overt protectionist defense of his tariffs. His tariffs were going to make the steel industry great again. They were going to bring back manufacturing jobs. Now, he still says this a little bit, but his primary defense of these tariffs, and particularly the tariffs on Chinese imports, is for what? Freer trade. The argument, and you hear this among Republicans all the time now, is that Trump's tariffs are a means to a freer trade end. And I think that's a really good sign that somewhere deep into the bowels of the White House, they're actually looking at the public opinion on trade, particularly in places like the Rust Belt. I think that they're seeing that this overtly protectionist message just simply does not resonate with the vast majority of the American public. So instead, how do you sell it? Well, you sell it as a trust us. We're going to get more agreements like the NAFTA 2.0. We're going to get an agreement with Japan. We're going to get an agreement with China, and we're going to actually have freer trade. Well, that's, you know, for a guy who 9 months ago tweeted, you can't have a country if you don't have a steel industry, and that's why we need steel tariffs, you know, that's a pretty significant change. And in that sense, again, I think that we aren't going to be going back to this kind of pre-NAFTA, pre-global trading supply chain world of the protectionist dreams of certain folks in the White House.
Scott Linsicum is an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute. You can rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.